RF energy. More invisible than air, more alluring than drugs, far more controlling than social engineering, and more deadly than anything known to mankind. John Dale. Some of my earliest memories are of sitting in front of our old black and white television in the basement of 703 East Grant Street in Spearfish. I'd watch my three favorite shows, Sesame Street, Star Trek, and MASH. I recall a special feeling of amazement at the sound of the bridge aboard the Enterprise, the call of the public address system inside the MASH encampment, and children laughing, running, and smiling during the intro to Sesame Street. I didn't think much about how those images got there or how the television worked. When I got older and started putting the pieces of a very interesting developmental puzzle together, I realized that, like air, wireless energy is all around us, and we can rarely detect it unless and until we begin to see the effects it has on the environment around it. The Apple IIe was first introduced in January of 1983. I was in Cuba at the time, being amazed by modern technology while struggling to get a fresh stateside donut. I remember watching Caddyshack at a friend's house with my parents knowing. The movie was played from a beta cassette, and I suppose the movie was a somewhat corrupting force for a kid my age. My friend's parents lived in an old, dilapidated brick home, fairly luxurious on base in Cuba, circa 1983. We lived just next door to them, our houses separated by an old, unused tennis court and playground. My friend's dad drove a Magnum PI-era GMC with big tires. Their family used to take more frequent trips to the United States, sometimes bringing back cartons of donuts. When they'd get back from a trip, you'd always know it because the son would ride his bicycle one-handed in circles, the other hand raised in the air, holding a powdered donut. With powdered sugar caked at the corners of his mouth, he'd bellow, "Fresh from the States," as his tires crackled through the dried weeds and loose gravel in tight circles on the tennis court. I used to worry about his front tire washing out, leaving the donut the only thing still rolling. This family had the disposable income to purchase various technology that undoubtedly sparked my interest in computers later in life. And for what it's worth, as an adult, I'm glad he didn't crash his bicycle. Their family enjoyed a huge tropical tree shading the backside of their house, and we played with his Star Wars and G.I. Joe toy collections in the cool back rooms of their geothermally cooled abode during the blistering hot tropical days. Our family was newer to the base, and we lived in a single-wide trailer with hurricane tie-down straps. I realized after living there for a few months that some things were more valuable on base. Some things on base that were a rarity. Functional, corrosion-free bicycles with good tires, computers, videotape players, and yes, even donuts. Somehow, we got our hands on an Intellivision gaming system with games like Utopia, skiing, and racing. Thankfully, around that time, I was also introduced to my first guitar, purchased from a sailor. The juxtaposition of that guitar and the video game system, an old stringed instrument and a shiny new video game, would come to typify the lives of my generation, one of the last to grow up before the advent of the internet and its many splendid yet horrific things. Thank you for indulging me as I trace the origins of my own affinity for technology. Some people are built differently when it comes to technology. I believe I'm one of those people. Around the seventh grade, I overheard my mother telling me about a man who lived in Kingman. "He works at Radio Shack," she explained. "He has cameras pointed at his driveway, and he can see when anybody's coming. If you ask me, he's paranoid." The memories are distant now, but at the time, all the security made me think that the man was probably up to no good. But who knows? He could have just been worried about being robbed. Nonetheless, when driving by the local Radio Shack, I would get excited thinking about the myriad of possibilities. Technology fascinates me, but I find my mind fixating on the ways it can help, not harm, humanity. I believe some people are built differently in that regard, too. Mr. Hillary was my math teacher in seventh grade, but his mind was always wandering to the skies. In the middle of his classroom hung a small model prop plane, and occasionally I would look up from my classwork to catch him gazing longingly up at the ceiling from where the little plane dangled, his face contorted into a perma-frown at being stuck in the classroom with us. Many of his math lessons included the little plane as a reference, and he proclaimed to the class many times, usually out of frustration with a class clown, that he would rather be flying. Mr. Hillary had his pilot's license and flew his plane whenever he could, and always seemed angry and frustrated to be teaching. For him, flying was freedom. I suspect it's the same way a 12-year-old boy views his BMX bicycle. Mr. Hillary also taught a computer class. The computer lab, which we got to use a few times during his class, was a room where all the computers were kept. It had a plastic smell from the computer cases, which were made from ABS, the same thing used for old telephones and switchboards. Unfortunately, computer cases could be made more cheaply this way, which sacrificed the naturally better shielding of metal cases. At the time, computers were candy to me, and I had no notion about any safety concerns from exposure to the EM or EMF energy. I could hardly wait to sit down and start typing and interacting with the computer. The gray, tan, blade-like keyboards extended from underneath the monitors. In the corner sat a connected printer. The lab even had a digital camera. One day, we took self-portraits and printed them out. That portrait is below. It's tough to describe the emotions that arise in me and seeing the shadowy image from so long ago. Those computers, Apple IIe, featured many kid-friendly programming exercises. One of the programs developed on those machines was the ability to plot dots on a Cartesian plane. Our assignment was a graph, draw something. Mr. Hillary handed out pieces of paper with the exact number of squares as the computer screens and then gave each of us a pencil. I thought for a few moments about what I could do. It was almost Christmas time in Kingman, and I thought about Mr. Hillary's pessimism. Then my idea occurred. I was doing good marketing even back then. I scratched it out on the piece of paper, listening intently as Mr. Hillary explained how to use a set of symbols, one per line, to fill our paper's design onto the computer. I got to work, typing as quickly as I could, hunting and pecking, the vibrations of the keyboard pressing back up against my fingers in a tactile response. One dot at a time, one line at a time, I would check my work diligently as the rendering came to life on the screen, one green dot after another. Finally, near the end of the class period, the illuminated green letters beamed back at me. Bah, humbug. I hit the print button. I showed Mr. Hillary my work. After a brief moment, he gave an approving huff and nod, then right in front of me scrawled 100 out of 100 at the top and handed it back. It wasn't until I started attending the University of Arizona in Tucson that the first consumer-grade cell phones started coming out. For around $30 a month, you could get a few precious minutes talking on an analog cell phone with a glowing orange and green LED display. The unit unfolded like a Star Trek communicator and allowed me to call back home from the middle of campus. But not for long before the battery ran out, or not for long before I ran out of talk minutes. The retractable antenna hung ominously behind the back of my skull as invisible electromagnetic waves pounded into my brain like the ocean wearing down a seashore. None of the dangers of this were widely advertised or known to the public, but it might not have mattered. The allure of having that Star Trek-like convenience might have overcome knowledge of the danger. Young people feel invincible even in the face of evidence of their own mortality. Nowadays, digital devices replace the old analog cell phones as go hands-free was the recommendation from the wireless communications industry because cellular speakerphones were often too small to hold far away. A small consolation is that to complete your call, digital devices use less radio frequency energy than analog devices. The rapid pace of development of these technologies was incredible. The sales and advertisement business boomed. After being on campus in Tucson from 1993 until 2000, then again from 2003 to 2005, I believe the industry often looks the other way as private industry conducts experiments, social, technological, and medical, on students. Surveillance technology used through wireless networking and other devices emits a radio frequency energy known to be dangerous in more than 65% of non-industry funded studies, according to a widely recognized article from The Nation called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. As no independent, wide-scale public safety studies have been conducted, is this the technology industry's Ford Pinto? When a Ford Pinto was rear-ended, the driveline would break, then jam into the road, rolling the rear differential up into the gas tank. Sparks from the drive shaft on the road would ignite the fuel, and the gas would dump out, ignite, and burn directly under the car. Ford Pintos, while sitting in traffic and unable to move, can instantly become deadly infernos, wherein if the driver tries to step out of the cab to escape the fire, they face a pool of burning gasoline. The Pinto can't move since the driveline is out, and the occupant of the vehicle is trapped. Recall that Ford Motor Company knew that the placement of the gas tank in the small Pinto sedan would result in deadly crashes, but it would also be cheaper. Ford knew that because they had insurance and resources to fight the inevitable lawsuits and settlements, they could still make a profit by leaving the known safety issue intact in their famous little death trap, a pronounced legacy of the religion of the actuarial. Does the technology industry have full knowledge of how harmful their products can be? Are they intentionally not designing them safer because of an actuarial analysis included into their profit margin calculations? New products like laptops, desktops, Wi-Fi, LED, LCD monitors, pad devices, and phones are test marketed to students, while the industry selling this technology managed to prevent the completing of the public safety studies that trend against them. Actuaries can correlate the probability of disease, injury, and death to a line item in the business plans of technology companies. These technologies have been made so instrumental and addictive that their producers can name their price. Figuring out what to charge for a technology doodad means adding up the production and other costs like insurance. Since people have to purchase these devices in many cases to function in society, insurance companies can charge virtually whatever they want. That said, municipalities that deploy these technologies cannot purchase insurance against the harm, but the manufacturers can. Writ large, this seems like a recipe for financial disaster for municipalities, as access points are now placed into nearly every classroom, office, and work area. Computer screens for advertising, coursework, and entertainment have been hung around nearly every corner. Webcams and microphones are now sold standard. Dangerous wireless hot zones are created by overlapping signals. Equipment is rarely encased in materials that maximize shielding from electrical energy, which is known to cause negative human health outcomes. So, what are we supposed to do here? To understand how the wireless industry operates, please refer to an article by The Nation called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe, a special investigation. The article tells a story of scientist George Carlo, who blew the whistle on Motorola for perverting the research about cell phone safety and the military-grade RF being deployed around the country. In order to understand how communications technology works at a base level, let's have a discussion of how computers process sound. Sound waves are slight, fast variances in pressure in the air. It is possible to record a series of numbers representing the variances in air pressure to represent an actual sound with surprising accuracy. Over time, the more accurate microphones became, the more realistic audio recordings became. Audio information is sent digitally by converting an actual sound wave from the air into a measurement of the difference in pressure over time. Through a connected microphone, the computer collects a series of pressure samples every second and stores them as simple numbers or integers. That series of numbers is a mathematical plot of the sound wave and can be stored in binary, also known as base 2. Once a sound's number representation can be converted to base 2, it looks like a string of zeros and ones. The sound and any other digital information can be sent by modulating or raising and lowering a signal. Signals can be transmitted using light, electricity, even in sound waves. Tandy is a type of computer that used to be sold at Radio Shack. It sold with a small tape recorder that could save information even when the computer was shut down. When the computer booted back up, it could access the tape recorder to restore the paper you were working on, the state of your video game, or other types of digital information that was in process. If you turned the volume up on the tape recorder, you could hear a series of screeching noises that were basically modulated audio signals containing digital information. Another way to do this, in theory, is to maintain a steady 1-volt current through a wire. When the current is raised to 2 volts, that's a 1. When it is lowered to 0 volts, that's a 0. Perhaps a smarter way to do it is to start at 0, then raise the signal to 1 volt, then to represent 1 by modulating the signal to 2 volts. So when no information is being sent, no electricity is being used. By detecting the modulation or fluctuations of current, the audio can be transmitted digitally. As digital sampling rates improve, the captured waveforms more accurately resemble real sound waves. The difference in fidelity or quality between an analog signal and a digital signal decreases regularly, but digital signals are only partial representations of the original audio, so digital audio takes far less electricity to transmit than analog audio. At a root level, modulated representations of 0 and 1 are the building blocks of the internet. Letters, numbers, sounds, videos, and other digital information can be converted and stored in a binary format, which is necessary to send the information over a signal-modulated channel. Below is an example of how base 10 numbers that we learned in school can be converted to base 2 numbers that can be modulated and sent over the internet. When a Wi-Fi emitter is used to send digital information, the signal is modulated as described previously. In order to modulate the signal faster to send data faster, the strength of the signal must be boosted. High-frequency transmission requires higher amplitudes and more power input, which also results in more wireless power being output. The fastest wireless transmitters are also the most dangerous, since they inject the most energy into human tissue per unit of time. In the 1970s, the U.S. Navy made its first correlative discoveries about the health risks of radio frequency energy. Since then, the usefulness of the technology is in a race with the carcinogenic effects it causes in people, plants, and animals. The cost of installing and maintaining copper wire and fiber optic cables is one of the main targets of the wireless industry. Maintaining cables is hard. So, one of the strongest arguments made for wireless technology is that cable maintainers are lazy. However, the real reason that wireless technology is so vociferously pursued is because of its power as a surveillance tool, environmental telemetrization. The wireless industry spends a lot of money to create a positive perception of their product's safety and usefulness. But the real payoff is to intelligentsia and marketers who benefit from the expanded knowledge of human behavior collected through cookies and spy technology and other technology as yet to be released. Faster transfer speeds help technologists mule increasingly heavyweight data back to server farms that try to predict and shape the future of the world. As an entrepreneur, I feel compelled to offer a guiding opinion on how we could proceed with the technology that has been invented. In addition to communication, radio frequency energy can be used to provide remote viewing access to areas in which it is installed, even being able to go through walls. Imagine being a U.S. Marine and having a heads-up display about what is going on inside Osama bin Laden's residence in Pakistan. You would be able to see the next room over before moving in, choosing the perfect moment that increases lethality to the target and reduces risk to your own team. Ooh-ah. Wireless signals can also be focused and used for crowd control and as an anti-personnel weapon. It can be used as a Pavlovian response training tool with positive rewards by turning the intensity of the wireless beam down when the target is doing something good. Or it can be used as a slap on the wrist by turning up the intensity of the wireless beam, all in real time, guided by massive databases of surveillance data and artificially intelligent computer software systems. I believe the development of this technology has reached a diminishing return domestically. We are now at the close of a technological era. It is a good time to consider what, from the inventory of options that is created, is a responsible use of wireless. Should we continue developing superweapons? Should we streamline technology, require that it be safe, and reduce our overall use to reintroduce people to nature? As is often the case, the technology might have some reasonable uses despite the dangers for misuse. For instance, dangerous work like firefighting, combat, and construction could be performed by robots using this specialized wireless technology. But anyone in proximity to the work should have a good insurance policy. Diminishing return is when you invest time, effort, and money into something and it grows quickly. But over time, if you keep investing the same time, effort, and money, you don't get the same results. The diminishing return happens when you don't get the same return on your investment. Wealth is created when a person takes something from the earth and adds value. The result should add more value than it costs to make. We have long since passed the point of diminishing return on our technology, which is more focused on usurping power and birthrights than on providing long-term value. After careful contemplation, I believe the following functions could be provided by cellular technology in a way that defies the diminishing return. All of the below functions could be provided reliably at 2G speeds or below. 1. Emergency services. Call emergency services to my location immediately. 2. Write secure notes to family, friends, and loved ones. 3. Get a map of my current location. 4. Take and send a photograph. We were just getting back from a trip to Arizona to visit family and make connections for our farm. Our entire family, after a visit with an associate from the Washington, D.C. area, contracted mono. When we returned home, everything seemed fine. However, one morning our oldest daughter woke up and called out to us. There were strange, dark, red spots all over her ankles, and she wasn't feeling well. We took her to the emergency room, where they drew blood and performed tests. My daughter's blood platelet levels were dangerously low, and she was diagnosed with ITP. In fact, at that moment, her blood would have been unable to clot, and even a minor injury could have been fatal. Originally, the doctors recommended she be sent to Sioux Falls, a five-hour drive away on the other side of the state, for treatment. After I insisted that I accompany her, they changed their recommendation and decided to give her the treatment here in Spearfish. The treatment worked, thankfully, but doctors were unable to provide a proximate cause. With a critical eye, I analyzed my daughter's room. I went into the attic and discovered a broadcasting smart meter directly above where she was sleeping. No one else in our family had the same issue. I unplugged the meter and waited. Eventually, the city called us and asked to troubleshoot their meter, at which time I informed them of the incident. They agreed to move the smart meter, and after some gentle persuasion, I convinced them to install a meter that does not broadcast RF signals. Since that time, our exposure to RF energy has been dramatically reduced, and as we all age, we keep a lookout for longer-term effects from our exposure. I was out there walking these lonely cold streets. It was after that great fascist war of 2023, fought with 5G. I went into a bar so I could hear some good tunes. I said, Hey there, barmaid, will the music be starting soon? Want to hear something sounds like howling at the moon? Barmaid, she asked me, what'll that be? I said, give me a tall, cool glass of green tea. Seems like the perfect drink for me. I said, hey there, barmaid, how much will that be? She said, hey there, mister, you can give me $4.50. Please leave a little tip for me. I think I really like you. I think that we could be a cute little couple eventually. But in a few minutes, I'm gonna be unable to perform, if you know what I mean. Unable to perform. Cognitively. Maybe it's this 5G or maybe this hard tea. Maybe your beauty just ain't something I can't see anymore. Oh, maybe it's this goddamn war. How am I supposed to know? I just don't know. I fight people I can't even see, toe to goddamn toe, trying to take our rights to grow. They're trying to make it so you and me. They're trying to make it so you and me, baby. They're trying to make it so you and me ain't got no more seeds that we can sow. I'm just gonna go on walking on these lonely cold streets, after this great fascist war of 2023, fought